obviously haunted. Obviously.
Are you recording? Do not tell me this joke until you are recording it.
All right. What do they call a dead blonde in a closet?
I don't know what.
Last year's hide and go seek champ.
Ah! That is a terrible joke.
Yeah, don't die in the closet.
Oh, I'm not gonna die. No, I've got wine, so I'll be fine.
You'll be fine.
It's like food. Hey, Allie.
Hi.
So we are officially in the month of October. We are in the month of October.
Yeah.
Okay, technically this is not the month of October. It's but by the time this releases, it'll be the month of October. Yay!
Feels October. Like October. Definitely feels like October.
It does. I'm here for it. So this in honor of this being the scariest of months, I have a real doozy for you. Because we're going to be telling a story about one of the most haunted places in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Sweet.
Oh my God. Have you ever been to New Orleans? Have you been there?
I haven't. My sister went once for a breast cancer get together and she fell in love with New Orleans. And she told me that I needed to go. And eventually I will. But there's a lot of scary stories that come out of New Orleans.
I am afraid of New Orleans. I had a few opportunities when I was in college to go. Because, you know, there's always someone in college who's like, I'm going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras or whatever. And wants you to come with them, right? And so I had a couple of opportunities. And I never took them up because there is something about people showing you their naked breasts all the time that really freaks me out. I'm just, like, not about that life.
Is that a thing? I didn't know that was a thing. But I'm from, like, Laconia, New Hampshire, and we have Bike Week, which is, like, this motorcycle week. So there's a lot of boobs. I think I'm used to people just showing their boobs.
You didn't know that flashing in New Orleans was a thing?
No.
That's how people get their beads at Mardi Gras. Like, you don't get beads just thrown at you for nothing. You gotta show some titty.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I'm not sure why tiny plastic colorful beads are appropriate currency for boobs, but that's how the transaction goes. I'm not sure.
Seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, it works for everyone involved, I guess. These are consenting adults, is the point. Consenting adults transacting their breasts for colorful beads. That's great. God. It's just not something that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
I once went to, like, I think it was a Greek restaurant, and there was a belly dancer there. Mm. And she was just dancing in the middle. There was like a stage set up or whatever, and there were live musicians, and she was dancing, and I was like, oh, this is fun, there's a belly dancer. And then she started going from table to table, and I got so embarrassed. She came up to the table and she was like dancing for us, and I literally had my hands up like blinders. And I was saying, I'm so sorry, you're beautiful and your dancing is beautiful, I'm just really uncomfortable right now. And she thought it was hilarious, so she would not leave. She just kept gyrating next to me, and I was gonna fucking cry. Like, please. I have social anxiety. Like, you have to.
I didn't know this about you. I didn't. That's a great thing.
I don't know why it makes me so uncomfortable, but this, like, I'm just a prude. I'm like a legitimate prude.
Oh, well, Derek and I, for New Year's Eve for 2020, we went to this big party in Worcester, and it was a burlesque show.
Cool.
But we didn't actually realize that when we bought the tickets. And so it's like there's live music and it's great. And then these women just start getting up there and start taking off their clothes. And it's like, okay, this is fun.
See, I'm comfortable with that as long as they stay on stage. It's when they're like next to me that I don't.
Yeah, I probably would be uncomfortable with that too.
That with even it doesn't have to be nakedness though. It doesn't have to be nudity because any kind of audience participation in a play or anything like that, I'm just sorry, no thank you. Not me, not this
And
one.
you're a theater director. I mean,
I hate that. I've always been the backstage. I want to be in the crowd in the dark. All the action's up there. I don't want those two things to, no thanks. I don't like it. Yeah, well, anyway, so we're talking about New Orleans. Enough chit chat though. Let's get into it. So I'm Becky.
And I'm Allie.
And New Orleans, Louisiana
Is
is
obviously
obviously haunted.
haunted.
It really is though. I mean, it really is. Okay. So we are talking today about the Mansion de la Loirie. Have you heard of it?
Another mansion. No.
Ugh, this is upsetting me. This story is a bummer. Trigger warning, just for everybody. This story is a bummer. There's a lot of violence, and there's racially motivated violence, and it's awful. This is an awful story. Do you have a drink? You can't have a drink because you're pregnant. I'm so sorry. I got a drink.
Got water, bitch.
Oh. You don't watch American Horror Story.
I don't.
I don't know. Do you?
I've seen a few seasons. Yeah, I kind of stopped when Lady Gaga was a little.
You stopped it at hotel. You stopped at hotel. Yeah. You know what? I'm just an unpopular opinion, but if you can make it to the end of that season, it's actually really good. You just have to push through to the end. Madame de la Loirie, which I'm also butchering the pronunciation. I'm terrible at French, but I can't help myself but like attempt it, and I'm bad. So Madame de la Loirie, she is a character in the season Coven. So like the season with the witches.
Yes. I wonder, I feel like I maybe have seen that season.
Well, for anyone who's seen that season, you'll have an idea of the story, like what we're about to talk about, because they, well, obviously that's a fictional show. Her character and their explanation of who she is based in history, and it's pretty fucked up. This is gonna be an F-bomb episode. Sorry, Mom. Okay, you all comfy? You ready for this terrible fucking story? I can't see your face though.
You'll get over
Okay.
it.
So we're gonna start with the story, a little bit of the history, then we're gonna talk about the haunting, and we'll debrief and give it a grade. So, history of the La Loirie Mansion. Dr. Louis La Loirie and his wife Delphine moved into the mansion on the corner of Royal Street in 1832. They were rich, influential, and respected in the city of New Orleans. So they were like high society, and this was a big fancy mansion that they were moving into right in the middle of the city.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you're not gonna think they're pretty cool for very long. So
Okay.
Louis definitely had money. I don't know if it was Louis or Louis. I'm assuming it was Louis because French. Louis had money. Their social standing, though, was due more to Delphine. So Madame de la Loirie, Delphine La Loirie, she had significant social currency. She was actually on her third marriage. Her other two husbands died mysteriously. Delphine seemed to gain considerable wealth and social status each time she married. Interesting.
Interesting.
So Delphine La Loirie was known for throwing these super lavish dinner parties with the really prestigious guest lists and serving sumptuous feasts and generally pampering her guests, like giving them anything they could possibly want. Lots of alcohol, all kinds of food, everything they could want. She was very generous. She was also said to be just a really charming and flirtatious person. And so she drew people into her, and she drew people into her social circle, but she also had an uncontrolled temper. Guests in her home witnessed her beating the staff, and her staff was enslaved people, right?
Mm.
Beating her staff, beating her daughters if they didn't respond quickly enough to requests or to things that she said. And she was rumored to be incredibly cruel behind closed doors. However, the LaLaurie family had a butler. He was an enslaved man, but he had lighter skin. And they dressed him in very expensive, very nice uniforms. They called them livery, but it's like the uniform from top to bottom of like your butler, your the person who greets people, who's the face of your staff, essentially. And he was constantly with Madame LaLaurie, so he was there all the time, and he was sort of the, like, the model staff member that she allowed people to interact with, that kind of, because he was clean and stylish and well-spoken and clearly educated, even though he was an enslaved person, people thought, oh, well, they treat him well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that when other members of the staff, when other enslaved people were seen, it was very clear in the contrast between him and the other people who were forced labor there that they weren't. They were gaunt, they were underfed, they were sickly, they were clearly not treated well. And the neighbors commented on the treatment of the enslaved people, the LaLaurie family, but they were told that that's family affairs and they shouldn't meddle. So essentially, like, you'd get invited to one of these fancy parties and you would be like, I don't think this is okay. Like, something's wrong with this situation. And Delphine LaLaurie, who is already well known for having a crazy temper, would basically tell you to mind your own business.
Hmm.
She was an evil human being. A neighbor witnessed Delphine chasing a 12-year-old girl, enslaved girl, with a bullwhip through the courtyard of the mansion. And the girl ran out of the house screaming. The neighbors come out to see what's happening. And she runs across the courtyard. Delphine is following her with a bullwhip. She turns around, runs back into the house. Delphine follows her, and the neighbor could hear the commotion in the house, even from outside, from across the street, and eventually sees the girl again running on the roof and to the edge of the roof. And Delphine just kept approaching with this bullwhip, and the girl backing away, 12-year-old girl,
oh my God,
backing away from Delphine, falls off of the roof and dies.
Wow.
And the neighbor turns her in to the authorities, Delphine, turns the LaLaurie family into the authorities, and this prompts an investigation and a lawsuit against them for the abuse of their enslaved people, because Louisiana, New Orleans at the time, this was before the Civil War, it was considered legal in Louisiana to own slaves, like to have enslaved people, but it was not legal to abuse them. So they had already started passing some more, I hate to call it progressive, but like they had started passing laws to kind of get away from slavery. And some of those laws were like, you have to provide food and shelter. You can't,
mm-hmm.
you can't abuse the people who you are holding captive. Like, so there was an investigation and a lawsuit, and the family was forced to, and I cannot put the air quotes around this enough, sell their workers And I put air quotes around that because, like, we just have to acknowledge that this was a part of history where, like, this is fucking ridiculous that you're even talking about selling human beings. It's ridiculous. But they were the punishment for the mistreatment of these people that were held captive by them was to sell them so that they wouldn't, you know, be in their under their care anymore. And Delphine essentially wouldn't let them go. And the rumor that went around was that she just arranged sales amongst other members of her family, and they returned those people back to her.
Ooh.
So she didn't even have to, like, she didn't really get any kind of punishment or anything. And yeah, and that was the end of it. And what happens, what's coming up, makes you wish that someone had just done something about it then and there. Like, this story is so fucking awful. Okay. So, it's bad. But, so there are rumors about her cruelty, and this comes up, and there's this lawsuit, and basically the social status of the Lawlery family just plummets. Like, people start to distance themselves. They are basically saying, you know, this is not okay, and they're sort of, they become social outcasts. And it was a pretty big scandal for them. So a little while later, in the spring of 1834, Delphine's horrible crimes get exposed accidentally. And what happens is there's this huge fire that is taking over the mansion. Like, you can see the flames from outside. It's in the middle of the night. And Delphine is scrambling in and out of the house to gather her belongings, her valuables. And when people show up, like volunteers to help fight the fire, bucket brigade, that kind of thing, her neighbors are asking about the members of her staff, the enslaved people in her care. There's none of them are coming out of the house, and they're asking about it. And she basically says, forget about them. Just save my valuables, save my furniture. And they don't, they refuse. So the rescuers go into the house and they find a gate that is blocking the way to the attic, and it's locked. And they ask Delphine and Louis to give them the key, and the Lawlerys refuse. They're not going to give them the key, and they try to block their way from breaking the gate down, but they do. And what they find is 7 people, men, women, and children, up in the attic, held captive in horrible ways. And I'm not going to go into super detail, because I feel like, to be respectful to these people, to the souls that went through this, I don't want to revel in the atrocities of it. But I think it's important that we say it was not just that they were locked up there. They were locked up in horrible ways, and they were being tortured. They were being tortured. It wasn't just, oh, we're going to put the kids in cages so they don't run away at night or something like that. No, there was no way to hide the fact that they were doing horrible, horrible things to these human beings, these living human beings. And it came out. And if you want to, I mean, honestly, anybody listening, you can look it up. You can look up some of the stuff. And some of the claims are, it's heartbreaking, but it's also just how a person could do that to another person is just mind-boggling. Like, the shit that she did to people is mind-boggling. And it honestly just has to be she was a psychopath. She was a psychopath. Yeah. She was a serial killer. And this is something that fucking
what?
Patriarchy right here. We think that women aren't serial killers. Like, you talk about serial killers and you're like, oh, and they're not likely to be women. But the fact is, there are probably plenty of women who have been serial killers and who are fucking psychopaths and who are evil motherfuckers who are just not, like, put in that category because they're not dudes. And you assume for some reason that they don't, you know, they're less likely. I feel like there are probably a ton of serial killers that are women who have just never been caught because we're like, she's a woman. She couldn't do that. She had daughters. She was clearly not murdering, gruesomely murdering people. No, she was. She absolutely was. The French language newspaper of the time, which was called the New Orleans Bee, called the treatment of these people barbarous and fiendish. And you have to think about, this is like white-run newspapers, right? In a time when slavery was legal. And so it was bad. It was really bad.
Did they survive, any of the people that she had captive up there?
So they pulled them out. They managed to pull them out, but I don't know if any of them survived. And yeah. I could not find that part of the story. And I think that's part of, you know, that's part of the way that our history has been written. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
They weren't considered. I couldn't find any of their names either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that an incredibly biased history and an incredibly biased way of approaching the stories in general. What seemed important for people to write was about the scandal and the fall of this family rather than the stories of the human beings who are victims. And that's the time, you know? And that's, I feel like that's why it's important when we tell these stories again, like in particular this one, I had a hard time looking it up and reading through the story. And I thought, I feel uncomfortable right now reading this story. And then I thought, and maybe that's the reason that I should figure out how to tell it. I'm not saying that I did a better job necessarily, but I think it's important that we try to approach this from a different angle and say, this is not, this was not one person doing something horrible. This was a system that allowed a person to get away with doing multiple horrible things for decades.
Yeah.
And then glorified them as a villain without any kind of reparations to the victims or the families because they weren't considered an important part of the story. And it's really important to recognize that when we're talking about this person who tortured people, it's not, she didn't torture people who were, she didn't torture other socialites.
Right.
You know what I mean? She tortured people that she knew she could get away with torturing. Because they had no way to seek help. And that makes her, in my opinion, just truly evil. Mm-hmm. Truly evil. And I wish that I could say, like, I want to be able to say that she got hers or whatever, that she got some kind of justice. And I can't. I can't say that because they fled. I mean, the crowd became enraged, and basically as the flames went out in the house, the crowd that had gathered there in the square just like trashed their house. They just like ran in. I don't know if they were, I think they were just angry. I think the city was just angry about this horrible atrocity, and they just went in and they destroyed it. So the whole mansion was destroyed. But while all this was happening, the family fled.
Wow.
They were able to take off, and eventually, according to the records, she ended up in Paris, and she died in Paris in 1842, so a little less than 10 years later, but like she lived out a whole nother decade in some fancy European city, being a fancy human being without having to face any kind of real repercussions for her actions.
That's upsetting.
It's really upsetting. It's really upsetting. And I'm absolutely certain that those seven people that they found were not the only people that she had done this to. You know, we know that she is directly to blame for the death of a 12-year-old child as well, and who knows how many others before anybody realized what was happening. It's just typical that the group of people who would go to these parties, maybe they would feel uncomfortable, or they would like talk about her behind her back, or they would be like, oh, I don't know what's going on. But like, they had to get to a point where there was undeniable proof of these horrible deeds before anybody did anything about it. And really, even then, like, what did they do? They're like, I just don't think we're gonna go to parties at the LaLaurie Mansion anymore. Like, we're just not gonna hang out with them. What? That's not doing something. You know what I mean? Ah! Sorry.
Wow, no.
The LaLaurie Mansion was rebuilt in 1838. So the fire happened in 1834, about 4 years later. They rebuilt the mansion as a private residence, and it changed hands and purposes several times. So private residence, somebody lived there. It was built almost exactly the same way it had been built originally. And after it was just someone's house for a while, then they made it into a school. Interestingly enough, it was a desegregated school in Louisiana first, like right after the Civil War, and then white folks got pissed off about it, and then it was like just a school for black children because white people are the worst. So, I mean, let's just be real. So then it was a music conservatory for like young women, and apparently that closed down because one of the teachers was caught being like inappropriate with his students.
jeez.
So that's great. It was low rent housing for a little while, and it was a tavern, and it was a furniture store.
Oh my goodness, it's done a lot of things. Was it haunted?
Oh yeah, the whole time we're gonna talk about
Ooh.
it. In 1930, a caretaker for the St. Louis Cemetery found a cracked copper plate, and the copper plates are like the, you know, like the headstones, but it's like the thing that you would put on a mausoleum or something, right? I think. So it was a cracked copper plate that read, Mrs. Marie LaLaurie, born Delphine McCarty, died in Paris on December 7th, 1842, at age 67. And so Delphine died in Paris, but apparently she was immortalized in the St. Louis Cemetery back in New Orleans. And it's possible that some or all of her remains were returned to New Orleans and are there. But there are some inconsistencies because I did read that that date is actually incorrect for when she died, potentially. But I don't know. I think, either way, I think that it's fucking terrible that she should be allowed to be buried there after what she did in that city. I think it's terrible that she should be allowed to be buried on consecrated ground, because if you believe in that, if you're like religious or whatever, you shouldn't allow someone who is evil to be buried in a real cemetery, I think. So the haunting. So the LaLaurie Mansion, obviously, horrible fucking story. Are you all right? Do you need to take a break? Do you need to take a nap?
Yeah, that's
Is a lot.
and I yeah, and I did see it on American Horror Story. I do remember that now.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. It's pretty brutal. And the what I from what I read, like the things that they portray an American Horror Story, which I saw first before I did the research and, like, knew the reality of it, it's not far from the truth. Like, they didn't really have to embellish much to make it horrific, mm-hmm. and that's awful. So, also, I love American Horror Story. Okay. Oh, and one thing that they showed in American Horror Story was that she had a relationship, Delphine Lalaurie had a relationship with Madame Laveau. What's her name? Marie Laveau. So, one of the storylines in American Horror Story is, like, this rivalry, this, like, this intense hate between Marie Laveau and Delphine Lalaurie, and apparently they did know each other, like they did travel in similar circles, and Marie Laveau did actually work as a hairdresser, which I found really interesting. So that's a really good, people don't like that season. I love that season. I thought Coven was a fantastic season. That's just me. All right. So, the Lalaurie Mansion has had a lot of different lives. It's been a lot of different things. And paranormal occurrences have been taking place in that house since pretty much that night of the fire. Like, the fire happened, the Lalaurie family fled, and that house has been said to be haunted the whole time. It was abandoned. Like, it was basically an abandoned ruin for years before it was rebuilt. And there are records of people saying that they could hear screams and cries of pain from the street at night, even before it was rebuilt. So it was rebuilt in 1838, and the new owner only stayed for a few months. So bought the property, built a new house there, and didn't even stay for an entire year.
Did they know the history? They
must have. I mean, everybody did. Like,
yeah.
It's, everyone knew what happened. And they were, it would be like if a celebrity, it would be like, I'm trying to think of a really asshole-y celebrity. I can't off the top of my head. Whatever. It would be like if some crazy celebrity, like, their house burned down and you found a bunch of, like, dead children in their attic. Like, you would know, you know, everybody would know, right? Yeah, it's like, it's Jeffrey Epstein or whatever.
I was just thinking it's Epstein.
Yeah. Like, everybody knows what's going on. So, he claimed to hear strange noises in the middle of the night. And he tried to rent rooms out, but nobody would rent from him. So he didn't want to be there by himself, and he tried to rent the rooms and nobody would rent for very long. Aww. And then he just, like, gave up. When it was a music conservatory, this is awful, and this is fucking awful. When it was a music conservatory for girls, the girls were tormented by a full body apparition that many of them saw, and they would come home with red whip marks on their bodies.
Oh my God.
So they would see a woman, an apparition of a woman in fancy clothing, and this woman would torment them, and then they would have, like, painful whip marks on their bodies. Yeah.
That's scary.
Later, it was an apartment building, and the activity escalated. So people would hear, escalated from getting whipped. It seems a little crazy, but people would hear screams and cries in the middle of the night from the attic. Children who were in the apartments would be whipped by some invisible entity. One man reported being rushed by a full-bodied apparition of a man in chains. And another tenant saw a figure wrapped in rags roaming the halls, and a mother witnessed a woman in expensive clothing, like expensive old-fashioned clothing, leaning over her sleeping baby. And when she walked up to see what was going on, the woman disappeared.
Oh my God, that would be terrifying.
Yeah, she left. She took off after that. Nobody really lived there for very long. And the mansion was abandoned again after that. And then during the time when it was abandoned, there was a kid. Let me say kid. He was like in his 20s or 30s or something. But he was the son of a wealthy family. I'm not going to pronounce it right. The Vignier family. And his body was actually discovered there deceased.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I read, it wasn't clear what he had died of. But he appeared to be, like, squatting in the house. Like, there was a cot, and there were several thousand dollars just under the mattress, just squirreled away.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's weird.
Yeah.
After that, someone bought it and converted it into a bar that they called the Haunted Saloon.
Nice.
The owner just really leaned into it, I guess. He kept a log of weird experiences that people reported, and that was, like, part of his shtick. But the tavern did close, and another man bought the property and opened a furniture store. He established himself in the space, and he was, like, running his business. And then he started to come in the mornings, and one morning he found that all of the furniture on the floor had been destroyed by some kind of gross-smelling, dark liquid.
Oh, my God.
And he couldn't identify it. He didn't know what it was, but it smelled disgusting. Everything was totally destroyed. So he had to clean everything and replace thousands of dollars of furniture. And wow. Then he came in a while later and found the same exact thing had happened.
Weird.
So he thought someone was, like, breaking in and, like, trying to, you know, vandalizing the store or whatever, trying to run him out.
Yeah.
And he decided he was going to wait there at night to, like, catch the culprits. And he was waiting there armed and ready to, I don't know, shoot some people. So he was, like, ready to go. And nothing happened in the night and nobody came into the store. And he was just, like, back in the back room or whatever, but nobody was there. He could tell no one was, there was no sounds or anything. Nothing was there. But when he came out of the back room in the morning, the same thing had happened. Even though nobody had come into the room or into the store, no glass breaking, no sounds, no anything, but everything was destroyed.
Weird.
At that point, he was basically out. Because he was like, this isn't natural. This is not someone did this. This whatever's happening is not natural. And he peaced out. Like, just took his losses and left.
Wow.
So in the 1970s, the house was converted into luxury apartments that had a common living room.
Oh, my God.
And tenants apparently experienced poltergeist activities and disembodied screams and all kinds of stuff there.
Oh.
The Lawlery Mansion, after that apartment complex failed and went out of business, was bought as a private residence again and was renovated. And at this point, it's pretty much renovated to, like, its original level of fancy splendor, right? And I did read that during the renovations, this last time around, that some skeletal remains were found.
Ooh.
But I could not verify that. So I read it in one place in a book, and then I couldn't find it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it didn't happen. Maybe it did. The people who own it now say that they have never had any kind of haunted experience. And so, I don't know, maybe finding the remains helped put some spirits to rest, or maybe we're just waiting for something to happen and something's going to happen later. I will tell you that one of the private families or private people to have owned the Lawlery Mansion was Nicolas Cage.
What?
I'm not even kidding. He bought it apparently, like, at the height of his popularity, and shortly after he bought it, like, he barely ever lived there. Shortly after he bought it was when his career tanked and he ended up having to sell it because he went bankrupt.
Huh.
And I'm not saying that's because of the Lawlery Mansion, but maybe that's because of the Lawlery Mansion. And that place might be cursed. It might be cursed.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
With a history like that.
Wow.
So the family that owns it now, they say that nothing has ever happened there, but, you know.
That's interesting. That makes me wonder.
So, what do you think?
That's a good one. I mean, with stories from all of the different things that it became and the horrible, horrible things that happened there. It makes me think that it was probably very much haunted. I mean, how could it not be? And so I question why it's not now. I wonder if there was some kind of ceremony done there or whatnot, but
Oh, I'm sure. You know,
yeah.
New Orleans is pretty well known for housing practitioners of mystical belief systems. I don't
Yeah,
know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
what else to call them, like, respectfully or whatever. And there's a lot of that. If you go, there's a lot of, you know, you can buy a bundle of sage, like, from
Right.
someone on the corner or whatever. So
Yeah.
I think I'm sure that there have been that type of thing, and maybe over the years, you know, that kind of energy is sort of wears off. I don't know. Or maybe it has to do with who's there, or who knows? It's so hard to say with that kind of thing, but so many people over the decades, over centuries, have come forward and said, here are the experiences that we're having. And it makes sense that those experiences would be really strong in the earlier days, you know?
Yeah.
The thing that really messed with me, I think, was the idea of these poor kids, these poor girls at this like music conservatory for girls
Yeah.
being whipped with a bullwhip. That's awful.
Yeah, that's scary. Well, and the furniture thing, that freaks me out too.
Just
It's
kind of
like,
weird. What is it?
yeah.
It is
I
gross.
wouldn't want to touch that.
That, and I know it's totally dumb because I know that like I am aware that movie stars have these problems all the time with like spending all of their money and then not working for a while and then being like, oh shit, I don't have any money anymore. But I don't know. It's kind of a coincidence that Nick Cage buys this like crazy mansion with this horrible history and then suddenly is like, you know, not anywhere anymore. I don't know
Wonder if
anything
he's
about Nick
ever
Cage.
spoken about it.
Well, he bought it under a pseudonym anyway. So like he
Oh,
didn't want people to know that he
right.
purchased it, which might just be, I'm sure that celebrities do that, like when they live somewhere other than Los Angeles, it's like, I don't want people to know that I'm here.
That's weird. I don't know, why wouldn't someone want to buy that place?
Why would someone want to buy that
Ooh.
place? Yeah, that's really the
Ooh.
thing. I don't know. They should just fucking tear it down. They should just tear it down. It's a painful story to do the research about because this, the history of it and the things that happened there were horrible and cruel, but this is not the only instance of the abuse of enslaved people.
Yeah.
I think that it's really important that we don't just sugarcoat even the history of it, you know, like you can't. It's not just the abuse of enslaved people, it's murder. Because if any of those people had had white skin, it would be called murder and she would be a murderer, right? So that's what we should call it. It's murder. She was a murderer. She was a serial killer.
The sad part too is, yeah, is that status and the amount of power that someone can have and what they can get away with. And we're even seeing that more and more today, and that there's a lot of people in power and they can use their money and their status to get out of anything.
Yeah, it's something interesting because my poor, okay, so I talked to my parents. My parents are 1,000, right? They're like in their early 70s. I love you guys. So they are upset, clearly upset about the things that are happening in the world because they grew up in the 1960s and like came of age in the 1960s, and they had this hopeful sort of period of time through the 80s and the 90s of, oh, well, our children are going to do better and we're going to see things get better. And now they're like, no, the world's shit. The world's gone to shit. Like everything is bad. And I keep having to tell both of them, just, it's not, I think we need to look at it sometimes as you hear these horrible stories And instead of going, oh, it's horrible, or going, oh, I can't, like, I can't deal with that, and I'm not going to believe that it's horrible, saying, it's actually a good thing that we know. It's good that we are aware, because we've been living in a world where this horrible stuff was happening and nobody was paying attention. You didn't have to think about it. You could just be in your little bubble. Right. And people have been suffering and we've been allowing that to happen. So, like, we need to step up. We need to recognize that, you know, America was born out of racism. We need to be honest about that. And we need to ask ourselves, like, if I'm to blame in any way, and it doesn't, like, I don't have to be a hateful person or I don't have to be a bad person to have done or said or whatever, something racist or biased in my life. But if I experience that and I've hurt someone and I don't try to do better and I don't try to make up for that, then I am a hateful person and I am a bad person. Yeah, that shit comes from what you're taught and from your experience or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to be better. Right?
Right.
And I think that's, like, the beautiful thing about America and about democracy is that we're able to, as a people, come together and be like, we want to do better. We want a better situation. That's what we wanted with the American Revolution. We want better than just to be under the British rule or whatever. We want to do better. We wrote the Constitution to do better. And I really believe, well, and I know because I've done the research, like, Thomas Jefferson wanted people to have access to education so that they could vote, so that they could, but he was also a slave owner, so whatever. But it's, like, it's important to not look at our country like it's got to be perfect or it's got to be whatever. Part of what makes it amazing is that we're able to see things that are happening in our country and go, oh, shit, we want to be the best, so we're going to fix this problem, instead of being like, we're just the best no matter what. Like, I'm going to ignore the problem because I'm better than everybody else. Don't ignore the problem. Fix the problem. Fix it. I'm, like, sweating balls right now.
You're on a roll.
I'm sorry. Should I cut all that out?
I don't know.
I know.
I feel it. And I mean, I'm bringing another child into this world right now, and
It's hard.
It's scary.
But it's also beautiful. Have you, like, talked to a child recently? Like, anybody under the age of, like, 15? Like, a kid?
Have I?
Mm-hmm. You're, like, a teacher.
I have a...
Talking to teaching, well, some kids?
Well, I have a 4-year-old upstairs and a 2-year-old. And... I did speak to them today.
I mean, I don't, so I don't know. But I don't know. Every time I talk to kids, I feel this, like, they're just so much better than we are about stuff. You know what I mean? The kids today honestly seem to just do better with, like, compassion and understanding, and also with just taking stuff in stride, like, not getting defensive. They're like, oh, I made a mistake. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Like, let's move on. And, you know, they just fix it and they move on. And they're just really accepting and loving. And I'm not saying that every kid is like that, because I know that's not the case, but in general, even before I stopped teaching, you know.
Yeah, I feel like the generation now is they're seeing all of the crap that we're fighting about as adults and dealing with, and they're kind of like, really, you know, just like, really, why are you guys fighting about this? I think that they're more open to how the world is going to be, how it's become.
I think I think we talk a lot of shit about kids being on their phones all the time or being, like, exposed to all this different stuff. But I think that exposure is actually making them more compassionate and more resilient and more connected in a lot of ways. And now we're going to ban TikTok and they're all going to be pissed. They're going to rise up. The teenagers will rise up. And... every 18-year-old will vote. Probably they'll vote Green Party, so it won't matter anyway, but... Oh. I'm kidding. Vote. If you want to vote Green Party, that's great. Just vote. Just vote. Vote for your heart. Just vote, Allison. Vote. I registered to vote last weekend.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Anyway, So that was a real fucking bummer, but I give it an A. It's a fucked up story, but legitimately, if anywhere in the entire world is haunted, it's that place in New Orleans and probably the entire city of New Orleans. Let's just be real. Like, there are ghosts walking all over that city.
Yeah, I don't think I think I would be too freaked out to go into that.
We're gonna go. Well, we can't go in there now. It's privately owned. Don't try to go there because, like, they don't like it. But so I guess we could, like, go up and, like, knock on the door, but we would get in trouble. I
No,
don't want
I
to. I don't want
don't.
to.
Nope, don't wanna.
But you can stand on the corner and, like, stare creepily. So we could do that. Flash. We could flash and maybe they'll throw beads at us. Yeah. Are we doing it? This is our plan for
You can do
2022.
it.
Oh,
I'll bring
no.
the
Okay.
beads.
I'll just we'll wait until no one else is around and I'll just flash you. That solves the problem. Yeah. There we go. Okay, well, that sounds good. Well, thanks for suffering through that with me, Allison, and for listening to my pointless ranting. It's hard to tell a story like that and not feel angry. Okay, so thank you to everyone who's listening, and remember to subscribe, rate, and review. It really helps us out, especially right now because people are trying to listen to some spooky stories. So, yeah, please rate and review, especially on iTunes and Stitcher. Those reviews really help people find us. And check us out on social media. All the links are on the website, obviouslyhaunted.com. And you can contact us and tell us all your stories, your crazy stories about flashing for beads in New Orleans
Yay.
and potentially ghost sightings at obviouslyhauntedpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Remember, New Orleans, Louisiana is
It's obviously
obviously
haunted.
haunted. Okay. I'm gonna put a trigger warning on.